Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to STEP Connections Episode 5. My name is Erin Chaffee, and I'm here with Mrs. Bucherri, who works as a literacy coach. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We will now begin with the questions.
Can you further explain what a literacy coach is?
So as a literacy coach, my job is to not just work with students, but to work with teachers and help them improve their practice and maybe try new things so that they can better reach their students.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up right here in Wallingford.
What did you want to do when you were a child?
So most of my life I did want to be a teacher. There was a short time where I wanted to go into international business so I could be all over the world and see different places and things, but I did come back to wanting to be a teacher and working with kids.
Where did you receive your education?
So I did my undergraduate work at the University of Hartford in Connecticut, and I have two master's degrees, one in elementary education from Southern Connecticut State University, and I also have a degree as a remedial reading teacher and a literacy consultant from Southern Connecticut State University.
Was school easy for you?
Most of the time. College science was not really fun. I'm not going to lie, that was probably the first time that I really, really disliked a subject area because I really, really struggled with chemistry in college, but most of the time school was easy for me and I enjoyed it.
Is your family supportive of what you do?
Yes, very much so.
Who in your family influenced you the most?
Who in my family influenced me the most? That's a really tough question. I think as a kid, I really wanted to be different than everyone in my family. No women in my family had gone to college, so that was really important to me, that I wanted to be independent, and I wanted to be a college graduate, and I wanted to be able to support myself and not need to rely on anyone else, because most of the women in my family didn't go to college and got married, and their husbands kind of took care of them and took care of the finances, and I very much wanted to be different than that and branch out.
Who was your biggest role model growing up?
So in terms of my career, my biggest role model is probably Mrs. Hackett. She taught second grade at Moses by Beach. She was in room 6. And she was the teacher. So when I was a kid, like eons ago, you were told who your teacher was the last day of school. You didn't have to wait for that letter you guys get in the summer. And I got on the bus and I told everyone I had Mrs. Hackett, and all the older kids were like, she's so strict, she's so mean, and I cried all the way home because I thought like I had this horrible teacher. And then the summer was horrible because I anticipated having this mean, strict teacher that all the third, fourth, and fifth graders told me was horrible. And then I got to her classroom, and that's when I decided I wanted to be a teacher. And that was the best teacher that I had in my elementary years. And the last day of school of second grade, I cried again, but for different reasons. I didn't cry on the bus because we always can have her third grade, but I cried on the bus because I didn't want to leave her room because I just had so much fun there. And that's when I first decided that this is what I want to be when I grew up.
When did you realize you wanted to be a literacy coach?
So I taught first grade for a really long time, and I loved that. And then I taught fourth grade for a few years. But I love reading, and I love helping students that find reading to be difficult, because for lots of kids, cracking that code and being able to read is a huge challenge. So that's when I went back for my second master's degree in reading. And that first took me to being a reading interventionist, where I worked with kids who were struggling with reading, but that job was not what I thought it was going to be. So in my head, I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to read all the time. I'm going to make kids love reading and love books. And then when I did the job, it was a lot of assessing students. It was a lot of record keeping. It wasn't what I had created in my mind. So when this opportunity came up to do this job, where I can not only touch students that come to me in my room, but I could touch other teachers and then help them touch their students, so I could have that bigger impact and do some of those creative things that I had kind of invented in my mind, I knew it was the job that I wanted to do, and I enjoy it very much because every day is very different and I get to do lots of different things, where when I was working in reading intervention, though it was very rewarding to see the students grow, it was a lot of the same thing every day. So after a few years, when I had this opportunity, I knew it was where I wanted to be.
How long have you been a literacy coach?
So this is my third year in this position.
Do you enjoy your job?
I do. My job is very rewarding. It's interesting. Every day is really different. Right now, I work at all four K-2 schools. I also spend time at central office writing curriculum. I go to a lot of professional development and training sessions, and then I'm responsible for bringing that new learning back and then training our teachers here in Wallingford. And because we only have one K-2 literacy coach, which is me, and then I have a partner in crime who is the literacy coach for the 3-5 schools, but there's not one at the middle school and high school level. Sometimes I even get to come do things at the middle schools and at the high school. So I don't think 2 days of my job is ever the same, which is what makes it really interesting, because I'm never bored. There's always something new to do.
What aspect of your job do you enjoy the most?
So I think what's the most rewarding is when you see the things that you've planted, either in a student as an idea or an idea that you've shared with a teacher, come to life. So a perfect example of this was just yesterday. I was at one of the elementary schools, and I did a book tasting. So when you kind of think about speed dating, which hopefully in middle school you don't know that much about, it's kind of like instead of going and looking for a partner, you're looking at these books. So we had 40 books set up in this elementary school's library, and the teacher just had 1 minute to look at each book, and we had a timer going, and we had all different topics from diverse authors, all new books that they might not have seen, and to watch the teachers talk about books, engage in books. I brought a couple teachers to tears because some of the books are really moving. But then I was in that same building just this morning, and I had, I think, 5 different teachers come up to me that they went and bought books last night. They went and checked books out of their library. They were using books for a lesson today. So knowing that the information you're sharing and the things that you're trying to get people to branch out into new things, that they're actually happening, that's really rewarding, because there are times when you present and share things and people may be listening to you, but I never know, because being in the four buildings, I'm not anywhere really enough to always see the outcomes of my work. So it's kind of nice when I actually get to see it in action.
Do you just go to elementary schools?
I don't. Most of my time's at the K-2 school, but I do spend time at the 3-5 schools, the middle schools, and the high school. So at the high schools, there's only one reading interventionist, and you guys only have one reading interventionist here and one at Marianne. So there are certain times where they need a little bit of help, and I do get to go do some work with the bigger kids, and once in a while I get to see some of my former students, which is also very interesting.
What would you say is like your favorite grade to help out in, and why?
So that's really hard. I really have a soft spot for first grade because that's the grade that I taught the longest time. Most students, when they come to first grade, are just learning how to read. Some of them are just learning how to learn. They're not really good necessarily always at, sitting still and following directions when they're 5. And when they leave first grade, most of them are really reading books and not just, recalling words, but they're laughing at the funny parts. They might fall in love with an author or a series. So that's really great to see them kind of grow in that way, because there's just so much growth in first grade.
If you could choose a different career besides a literacy coach, what would it be?
One more time?
If you could choose a different career besides a literacy coach, what would it be?
I don't know. That's a tough question. My job is very rewarding in lots of ways, but lots of times when I look at my college girlfriends who've gone other career paths, I do have envy sometimes when they have jobs that involve travel. And some rewards that I don't get with my job. So I really haven't thought much about what other career I would want, but if I were to have another career, it would probably be definitely something that I would not be in the same place all the time. Definitely something where I could travel for work.
What has been your biggest challenge in your career?
My biggest challenge in my career is probably myself, because I think I'm really hard on myself, and I sometimes will get frustrated because I want to be able to fix everything, and I want everything to go the way that I want it to go, and that's not reality, that's not the real world, and sometimes it's really hard, as teachers, we're not out in the business world. If we fail at our jobs or something doesn't happen the way we want, it's not like, the CEO doesn't get to go on his cruise. If something doesn't go well for us, it impacts kids, so it's hard when I don't have either the power or the time or the money to fix all the things that I want to fix. That's hard. It's hard to sometimes kind of prioritize. If I can only do so much, what's the most important thing? What's going to have the biggest impact on kids? What's going to have the biggest impact on teachers? And what's going to make the biggest difference? And sometimes that's really hard.
Do you have any tips for someone who might want to be a literacy coach?
So I think in terms of getting a career as a reading specialist, a reading coach, that it's really important to network, to see what's happening in other districts. At this point in my career, it's really nice when I first came into teaching. You know, there's no such thing as Twitter. And social media, the way that you guys are kind of like born into having all that social media at your fingertips. And now through Twitter, I have created a network of teachers all over the country, authors all over the country, that I keep tabs on what they're doing and the things that they're bringing to the field and the things that they've tried and conferences that they're going to or professional books that they recommend. And that just wasn't there when I first started college, and that's really helpful because I could do it from my couch in my comfortable clothes. It doesn't require paying to go to a conference. And that's a really great way to stay connected with the things that are happening in the field in a way that's really convenient for your schedule.
On the subject of, like, technology, do you think it, like, helps people, like, younger children learn to read easier, or do you think it's just more of a distraction?
So technology is a big one. So, you know, I do worry that some kids are more comfortable with devices than they are with books. Sometimes I think as a society our priorities are wrong, and that really the most important thing is that you know how to read, because it is, you need it for everything. On the flip side, you know, having something like a Kindle in terms of technology, some of the resources from our library, that if anyone has a device, you know, the Wellington Public Library has BookFlix and all kinds of free ebooks. So it opens up doors for kids that might not otherwise have access to books, that they could get, you know, all of those books for free. So I think that is really helpful. There are lots of programs out there, computerized programs that claim to teach kids how to read, that you just sit in front of a computer and I'm going to, you know, take you through the acquisition of reading and take you through these skills. And I don't necessarily believe in those kind of programs. I think that a good teacher of reading is way better than any phonics program they could sit down and do on a computer. And I think, unfortunately, you know, we turn to those sometimes because there's not always enough teachers. But I think that is more valuable to a kid who's struggling how to read than the technology. But like everything, I think there's pros and cons. I think it's, you know, great that we could get copies of ebooks in kids' hands. But I do worry that kids spend more time on their devices than with books.
What has been your biggest accomplishment as a literacy coach?
My biggest accomplishment as a literacy coach? In the past 2 years, I've gotten a couple of big grants that I think have the potential to have some really big impacts on not just the students in my school, but on our community. So last year, Jamie Hacking Ferrone, who's the 3-5 literacy coach, and I worked with the Wellington Public Library, and we received a grant, and we got funding and some support from our friends at Sheehan to build Little Free Libraries. So there are Little Free Libraries at all 8 elementary schools, and Mrs. Ferrone and I are actually going to SCOW on Monday, May 7th, to present them with a Little Free Library to just increase access to books. You know, kids who don't read, you know, might not be because they don't want to read, or maybe because they don't have books in their house, because mom and dad are working 3 jobs and don't have time to get them to the library, or when mom and dad do have time to get them to the library, it's closed. So having the Little Free Libraries, all the buildings, if the parents are picking a kid up from school, if you're going to use the playscape, the Little Free Libraries are there 24/7, any time of day, any day of the week, any holiday, that kids have access to go pick up a new book. So I think that has the potential to really impact families, to impact students. We've been very lucky between all our support for that project here in the district, the Wellington Public Library. That grant was funded by Walmart. So it's been a lot of cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, to bring that project to life. But the last few Little Free Libraries will be put in this spring. So we're really excited about that.
What do you think it takes to be successful today?
It takes a lot to be successful today. It's You have to have really good people skills and to know how to deal with lots of different personality types. You know, working with kids in classrooms and my children at home, you know, we have conversations all the time that just like there's a kid in your class you don't like or a kid on your team you don't like. Sometimes as an adult, there's a coworker that you might not have the same working style or you might not have the same priorities, and you have to learn how to be productive. You know, no matter what you're faced with. So having those people skills of knowing how to accept someone for who they are, knowing how to agree to disagree, I think is really important. And I just think that, you know, hard work and a good work ethic is really important. I often say that hard work beats talent any day, because someone could be really good at what they do, but if they don't, if they don't put in that hard work, if they're not determined, if they're not willing to go that extra mile, it doesn't matter. So I think really having those people skills and being willing to do the work that it takes to be successful in whatever it is that you're trying to achieve is really important.
Are there any more questions for Mrs. Bucheri?
I have a question. So you mentioned like in the beginning that like in college, of course, that was hard for you, that wasn't really like the most exciting or fun time in school. Do you have any advice for people who have experienced like classes like that and how to get through them to get to what they want to do?
So, you know, I think the older you get, in some ways that gets easier, because when you guys leave DAG and you go to high school, there are core classes you have to take, but then you get to take things that you want to take. And in college, you know, again, there are core classes you have to take, but you have, you know, some choice. So I think that always makes things easier, because when you're in a class that you're invested in, you want to be there and you chose to be there. If the class is hard, usually you're willing to work for it. I think it's harder when it's one of those core classes that you know that it's not your strength, and you know in your heart that says, you know, I knew I was going to school to be an elementary school teacher. I'm like, why do I need to know all of these things about chemistry? Like, it was just like someone was speaking in a foreign language to me. Like, I really struggled so much. But I think, you know, you grow from struggle, and I think struggle is part of life. So just being able to realize that everything's not going to be easy. You know, you're not going to get an A in every class. But just coming up with a plan of, you know, how can I help myself? So can I approach the teacher? Can I kind of break down the assignment into smaller parts, and just finding something that makes it bearable for you to get, you know, through it, because it's not all going to be easy. And giving up isn't an option. So just kind of finding a way to break down whatever the problem is and get through it.
What was your what was the hardest part of college for you besides the class?
Besides that class?
Did you ever have trouble with organization or things like that messed you up with it?
No, I am so, that is definitely a strength. Organization was never tough. I think, you know, freshman year was probably a little bit struggle. I grew up in a home that was very strict. I didn't have, you know, a lot of freedom and choice making. My parents were just a little bit old fashioned and just stayed right on top of me. In many ways, that was very helpful and helped me become who I am today. But at the same time, when I went to college and I now had all of this freedom, and no one telling me what to do. That was really an interesting first few months, because I went from having no freedom at all to all of the freedom in the world, and really figuring out, okay, like, this is what I need to do. This is how I need to get it all done. That was interesting, and that was some serious growing pains those first few months. But again, you know, people always say that high school are the best 4 years of your life. I would totally argue and say college are the best 4 years of your life. I loved college. I made some of my lifelong friends there that my kids call their aunties and their uncles. I was so prepared for my job, and did so many things and was so involved in college. And it was definitely the best 4 years of my life.
As far as like college, what would you recommend as like a major for people who would like to go into like the field of like a literacy coach or a teacher?
So usually teachers start either in secondary education as a major or elementary education as a major. There's also special education, and then usually after that, they would specialize and go to reading, English language, teaching English as a second language. So when I went to school, I went for a dual major in elementary ed and special ed. So as an education major, you have to have some kind of minor or background. And I think given the struggles that so many students come to school with today, that I think going some kind of dual certification so that you have more than one door open to you, I think my minor being that I took so many classes in psychology, that really helps me as a teacher, because it's not just about, you know, the reading. It's, you know, how to make kids, you know, motivated, and how to make them tick, and how to help, you know, a kid who has maybe so much going on at home that they really don't care about the book that I'm putting in front of them, because they're dealing with so many other things that they really can't focus on what I'm asking them to do. So just knowing how to connect and to help reach them so that we could get through that stuff and then get back to the academics.
So you said that you wanted to, like, become, like, you knew that you wanted to become a teacher, but if, like, you tried those classes and, like, the classes just weren't working for you, what do you think you would have done?
I probably would have gone into business, just because that's one that's a little bit broader, and there's lots of things that you could do with it. But there's lots of different avenues that you could go.
So for being a teacher before and then going into being a literacy coach, is there any, like, kind of advice, I guess, for, like, teachers who, you know, now being a literacy coach, being able to see, like, more, like you said, psychologically, how to teach people? Is there any advice you have for teachers
who wanted to maybe switch from, like, the classroom to go down the road of reading? That's a really good question. I think the best advice is to really look at all the things that are available to you. I mean, right now there are so many different, even besides just going back to school for another degree, there are so many programs that really help kids who are dyslexic and have other, learning disabilities out there, like specialized trainings that even if you're not sure that you want to be a literacy coach, or you think, oh, maybe I want to do something in reading, to even go to one of those. They have, like, one-week training sometimes in the summer. You can get certified in these alternate ways to teach kids how to read. Even having just that background as a classroom teacher, because when that kid is then in your room, because even if a student gets help from a reading interventionist, or even if I go in a class and help a kid, I'm not there with them 6.5 hours a day like their teacher is. So if you think that that's a road that you want to go down, to maybe get trained in something like Orton Gillingham, or get trained in something like Wilson Reading, which is really designed for kids who are dyslexic and process letters, you know, differently. Like, their brain is just wired a little bit different. A child who's dyslexic is really smart. It's just that their brain doesn't process the print the way most people's brain would process the print. So if you did something like that, and then were able to do that in your room and see if this is something that, you know, I find rewarding and is helping me, then that might be a good step to really solidify if that's the avenue that you want to go down.
Like, what are some of the things that you do to help, like, them learn how to read and process those skills?
So for a kid who's really struggling with reading, I do a lot of different assessments to kind of drill down to what it is that's so hard for them. Lots of times, if reading is hard for a kid, the first time I sit down with them, you know, they'll be like, I don't want to read. I can't do that. Because, again, think about it. If I asked you to do something that was really hard, your first response wouldn't be, oh, yay, let me do it. Your first response would be, no, thank you. So now think about, like, a 4 or 5-year-old, you know, and that's, you know, they're like, oh, no thanks. I don't want to. Can I go play now? My teacher's over there. So really the most important thing is getting to the root of what is it that's getting in their way. And once we figure that out, just kind of finding a way to make it fun for them. Lots of times, you know, I know I'm a lot older than you guys, but I'll put Mr. Bukakis in the same age group as myself. But when we were kids, a lot of learning was, you know, flashcards. Like, you're just going to memorize it. So for a kid who's not a visual learner, you know, if we're just asking them to process something visually, but that's not how they learn, then they're never going to get it. And sometimes teachers or parents that, you know, have the best of intentions will keep doing what they've always done. And I'm sure you've heard the saying that if you keep doing what you've always done and you expect different results, that's kind of the definition of insanity. So kind of finding, okay, instead of continuing to do it that way, what's another way? So sometimes if that's what we've been doing with a child for letters, we've just been doing some kind of flashcards. Well, how else can we approach the letters? Can we tap into another modality? Can we have them, you know, making the letters with clay? Can we have them writing the letters, with sand so that there's feedback on their fingers? We're just finding other ways to kind of tap in and make it a little bit more meaningful to them. And I think that that's something that is really important for kids. And lots of times I think that reading is visual learning is usually the go-to. And I think that that's not, what's best for everybody. You really need to tap into all three modalities and give them that.
I agree. I mean, we definitely had something like that where, you know, they just kept on drilling it And then, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I don't get it, or I'm bored, or whatever you guys have for an excuse, but it just, I didn't get it, you know, especially with English as a second language.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke Greek before English. It was a difficult time. Like, they just kept feeding me cards or, you know, these kinds of diddles or whatever. I'm like, I didn't get it. So there was
right.
some times where you just, you know, I'm just frustrated.
And sometimes you have to, like, make it fun. So another favorite
Absolutely.
Teacher that I had was Mr. Harris, who taught high school English at Lyman Hall. He recently passed away, and we kept in touch up until he passed away. And I remember I was in an honors English class with him. So again, you know, it's, you know, bright high school kids, and we went in and we had to read Shakespeare. And now I'm not sure how familiar you guys are if you've looked at any Shakespeare, but it's not really easy to read in comparison to modern literature. So we walk in, and Mr. Harris had gotten us all gold crowns similar to those you wore at Burger King or McDonald's for your birthday parties. And we each had to have a Shakespearean name, and we had, you know, assigned reading, and you would get, like, jewels for your crown if you did certain things, and then get point off the test. And when he was first explaining this to us, we're a bunch of teenagers, and we're looking at him like, what are you doing? Like, we're not babies. What are you doing with these gold crowns? But lo and behold, a few weeks later, when we're knee-deep in Shakespeare, and it was really, really hard, we were working our tails off to get those darn jewels put on our crowns, because we knew it equated to points on the test in the end. And I just think about that. That's, you know, sometimes I think, just as teachers, remembering that, you know, you guys might be bigger, but you're still kids. And just finding ways to make it fun and finding ways to connect to you. I mean, I can know everything there is to know about my content area, but if I don't know how to connect with kids, if I don't know how to make them comfortable, if I don't know how to make learning fun, it's not going to reach you, and it's not going to matter. And I think, you know, those are the teachers that I remember. They might not have, you know, known everything about their content area, but I wanted to be in their classroom. And as silly as it seemed at the time, because again, with that example, at first we were like, he's nuts. Like, what is he doing? But, you know, here I am decades later, and that's what I remember about English at Lyman Hall.
For students who their teachers don't really design their, like, curriculum to every single, like, different style of learning, how would you suggest that they figure out what works best for them and use that for studying?
So I think that's hard. I mean, there's so many different ways. There's an expression that there's so many different ways to make a lasagna. Because, you know, there's not just one way, and there's not just one way to learn. And I think, you know, when you're learning those study skills, like, okay, I have this big test, like, what's the best way for me? I think that you have to, you know, especially now when you're not in high school or college, you're still in middle school, so to kind of find what it is that works for you, and to be open to different ideas and different things, and not everyone's you know, brain is wired the same way. So to try different strategies, even if, you know, what one teacher suggests or what a friend does or what a family member is like, oh, I study this way, even if it seems really absurd to you at first because it's not your way of thinking, just be open-minded and try it, because you might find that even though it seemed really silly, that it is something that helps you.
Do you think that ability that you have to, like, figure out a way that somebody thinks is good for more than, like, for more jobs that aren't in the same field?
Absolutely. I think that goes back to just having kind of those people skills, like knowing how to connect to people and kind of trying to understand where people are coming from. I think that's helpful in every field.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mrs. Bouquet, for taking time out of your busy schedule for speaking with us today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in.